And if he let the foolish elf get himself killed. At least not without him. Phelan practically floated up to the rooftop beside Guy de Vance's tower and gracefully scaled the building. Much to her surprise, Atharia Donnell was only a second behind her, with her elegant staff strapped to her back and brown hair braided down her spine. Indeed, it seemed the Major's apprentice was as mysterious as the Master. Looking over the lip of the tiled roof, Phelan could see Asher, Rayner, and Nathaniel in the darkened alleyway across the street. The Princess had wanted to accompany her, but Phelan tried wherever possible to keep her out of harm's way. She had failed at that continuously since they arrived in Ilion. Hopefully, by retrieving some crystals from the tower, the companions could bypass the moonlit plains and avoid the threat of centaurs and bandits. Of course, the threat of a few centaurs and slavers in the arid lands was nothing compared to their final destination. The elf blinked slowly and pushed the distractions from her mind. Right now she had to concentrate on making the jump and surviving the fall. Phelan had boasted that an elf could make such a feat, but in truth, it was a long way down. She looked at Atharia and wondered how the fragile human would ever survive the next few minutes. "Are you ready?" Atharia asked, limbering up. Phelan raised her eyebrow. "Are you?" Atharia contorted her body into all kinds of shapes while stretching her muscles. "There's a chance that the tower's wards have been upgraded since my master installed them." Phelan still found the whole thing unbelievable. "And just how is it that your master was around 5 centuries ago?" "I thought elves knew everything." Atharia stood straight and met Phelan's questioning gaze. "So did I." Phelan had indeed been humbled since their arrival in Ilion. Valenis's entire plan had blindsided her, as it had the rest of her kin in Ada. Before any further exchange, Atharia whipped her staff about and began to chant in the ancient language under her breath. Phelan felt the hum of magic against her skin, before the wind picked up with supernatural force. Fallen leaves were spun into miniature tornadoes about them, until Atharia was lifted from the tiles and carried through the air atop the currents. Phelan watched, impressed, as the young human landed softly onto a patch of grass on the other side of Gadamance's wall. The elf thought about using similar magic to transport herself, but the superior grin on Atharia's face needed wiping away. Elven magic would always impress the humans, but their natural strength and speed would better shock them. Phelan exhaled a sharp breath and ran for the edge of the roof. Her jump was true, and she easily cleared the wall, but the drop was considerable. Phelan braced her legs, ready to drop into the landing and absorb the blow. By the time she stood up, Atharia's smug expression had disappeared, replaced with respect. Phelan ignored the pain in her knees and adjusted her clothes, having left her hooded robe behind and strapped her scimitar to her back, instead of her hip. The grounds within the wall were simple aesthetically, with a couple of sheds and what looked to be an archery range, though the elf suspected the students weren't learning to fire arrows at the straw dummies. As Hadavad had warned, there were 2 stone gargoyles, wielding a mace each, either side of the main gate. Neither statue moved in their presence, proving Hadavad right in his suggestion to jump the wall. As they approached the doors at the base of the crooked tower, Atharia yelped in pain behind Phelan. The elf turned about to see the slender roots wrapping around the apprentice's legs and arms. Before she could act, another root snaked through the grass and claimed Atharia's staff. The root retreated back into the large oak tree in the corner of the grounds, and the staff disappeared within the branches. Phelan reached for the scimitar on her back, when a thick root coiled around her ankle and dragged her to the ground too. The elf could only watch as more roots ensnared Atharia and drew her slowly towards the oak tree. Before she could loose a destructive spell, the thick root was sucked back into the tree, and Phelan with it. Gideon dropped to his knees, exhausted, by the edge of the clearing. He unbuttoned his leather jacket, which appeared brown instead of its usual dark red under the moonless night. After catching his breath, the mage surveyed the line of trees to his right and left, searching for Galanor. When there appeared to be no sign of the elf, Gideon focused his eyes on the clearing of tree stumps and fallen logs spread out before him. The patrolling dragons had been replaced with new, larger worms, however. Malaith's sleeping black silhouette was still easy to spot in the center of the clearing. After several minutes of scanning the ground for Galanor, Gideon pulled Abigail's wand from its holster on his thigh and touched his temple with the tip. The spell changed the structure of his eyes, causing a moment of irritation, and allowed the mage to see vibrant colors in the dark. Oh no! Gideon spotted Galanor lying flat on his stomach behind a fallen log. The elf was creeping towards Meliath's sleeping bulk, but he was only a few feet away from an enormous gold dragon. There was no way Gideon could reach Galanor before the elf found his way to Meliath. The mage was more than aware that as a human, he didn't possess the natural skills to be as covert as Galanor. The dragons would hear him blundering through the clearing within moments. A spell of invisibility wouldn't hide his noise, and if he coupled it with another spell to conceal the sound, Gideon would be drained by the magic in minutes and left a spluttering mess at the mercy of Meliath. Every second he delayed, Galanor got even closer to the black dragon. The mage crouched next to a tree and rifled through his enchanted satchel. His entire arm sank into the bag until his shoulder disappeared within its bottomless depths. "Where are you?" Gideon knew there was only one way he could reach Galanor. In his early years at Corcanath, the young mage had mastered the art of getting into trouble. Eventually, Gideon came up with the idea of having an escape plan to ensure he was never caught where he shouldn't be. His hands finally wrapped around the small sphere, and he silently thanked the gods for his fortune. Gideon dashed off into the forest and planted the small sphere between two large roots. Using Abigail's wand again, the mage ignited the sphere, allowing the flames to burn through the wrapping that encased the flammable ingredients within. He didn't have long. Gideon sprinted back through the woods until he was by the edge of the clearing again. Galanor hadn't moved from behind the fallen log yet, though Gideon could see why. The golden dragon rested one of its mighty legs atop the log as it surveyed the land. The silence was instantly cut when the small explosion erupted in the forest behind Gideon. The sparks could be seen through the branches, and the sound of wood snapping seemed to echo for miles. As planned, the golden dragon and two of the others took flight and headed straight for the source of the explosion. Gideon remained hidden until they flew past him. There was still another dragon on the other side of the clearing, remaining behind to watch Meliath, whose purple eyes were now open. The black dragon stirred, but made no attempt to fly away or start a fight. Gideon remained low and scrambled over the fallen logs and scattered stumps. It was fortunate that he tripped and fell behind a log, just as Meliath turned his horned head to investigate the ruckus. The mage remained flat and did his best to imitate a dead person. Galanor was only a few feet away, behind another log, closer to Meliath. A sharp snort told Gideon that the dragon had turned away, and he dared to steal a glance over the fallen tree. He was now hidden from the other dragon by Meliath's bulk, but that offered little comfort to Gideon. Slipping over the broken log, Gideon clambered across the dead tree to see Galanor rising into a crouch, ready to walk up to Meliath.
"What are you doing here?"
Galanor mouthed silently, alarm spreading across his face.
"Stopping you from getting yourself killed,"
Gideon mouthed back, but he wasn't sure how much the elf could read.
"Go back to the—"
Galanor's mouth fell open, and he slowly looked up, over Gideon's head. The mage could feel a dragon's breath on the back of his neck. Phelan twisted her body as she was dragged across the tower's grounds and pulled free her scimitar. The blade cut through the monstrous root in a single clean swipe. The elf turned her momentum into a forward roll and ran for Atharia, who was being yanked up into the tree. The apprentice's mouth had been covered by a root, and her staff was being absorbed into the trunk. Of all the spells, fire would deliver the most damage to the tree, but it would also attract the attention of every person in Lirion. Instead, Phelan pushed her hand out and expelled a torrent of ice and bitter frost. The spell froze the staff in place, stopping it from being completely absorbed and becoming a part of the tree. Atharia, on the other hand, was starting to lose the ability to even struggle, as her limbs continued to be strapped to her body. Phelan was reluctant to use the ice spell over Atharia, in case it permanently damaged her skin. Using her extraordinary sense of balance, Phelan half-skipped and jumped up the tree, until she could cut the branches attached to Atharia. The apprentice fell back to the ground, still tangled in roots and branches, but unharmed. The elf dropped lightly to the ground and continued to slice the attacking roots, while Atharia wriggled and shrugged off the dead branches.
"Get back!"
Phelan pulled the apprentice to a safe distance, and the root slithered back into the tree, defeated. With an extended hand, Phelan commanded the staff to break free of its bonds and fly into her grasp.
"Thank you."
Atharia took her staff back, through labored breaths. "Let us be done with this place." Phelan replaced her scimitar on her back and made for the tower doors. Surprisingly, and to Phelan's relief, the doors held no wards or protective spells. Those set around the grounds were obviously considered enough to dispel intruders. The interior was dim, illuminated by torches on the walls and the occasional candle. Portraits lined the walls between the torches, each with a previous teacher, now long dead. Athari opened the door at the end of the foyer and gasped at the size of the room that greeted them. It was a library of sorts, at least 20 floors in height, but its width was impossible. The crooked tower simply wasn't as wide as the space before them.
"A pocket verse," Phelan whispered. "I didn't think humans had mastered this kind of magic."
"Only on simple items, such as bags or chests. Hadavad had spoken of this before, but I've never seen it on such a scale. Do elves do this form of magic?"
Atharia looked on, amazed.
"Yes. It allows for more space, without having to take over too much forest." Phelan found herself instinctively reaching for her scimitar. Something didn't feel right about the tower. Dark magic fuels this place. Judging by Athario's expression, Phelan could see that the apprentice wasn't surprised.
"You know of what I speak?"
Atharia looked the elf in the eyes.
"Yes. Well, we suspected."
"And you kept this to yourself?" Phelan hissed, retrieving her sword completely.
"There are still crystals here you can take, but Hadavad wishes to cleanse Lirion, as well as testing me in the process. I have to be ready."
Atharia gripped her staff in both hands.
"Ready for what? What is he testing you for?"
There was too much mystery behind the old mage, and it was starting to aggravate the elf. Frantic whispers began to fill the spiral-shaped chamber. The voices started at the top of the library, and quickly descended until it sounded as if they were surrounded. Atharia dashed around the tables and picked up a discarded empty cup, which she proceeded to fill with water from a small skin on her belt. Phelan walked over to observe the apprentice drop a fine piece of iron filament into the water. It was a crude detection spell, but effective in small spaces. Atharia walked around the tables, following the flickers of the iron filament as it turned in different directions at the bottom of the cup.
"Through there."
Atharia pointed at the door situated in the far corner.
"You'll find crystals through there."
"What are you doing?"
Phelan asked, concerned with the ominous whispering.
"I'm going to fight."
The elf looked around.
"Fight who exactly? What evil controls this tower?"
"The Black Hand," Atharia said, with disgust. "They are a group of mages who practice the ancient dark arts and necromancy. They were formed centuries ago, before Hadavad's time even. Korkanath has tried to root them out, but to no avail. Hadavad made it a personal mission of his a long time ago to destroy their foul order once and for all." Phelan looked at the door leading to the crystals and back to Atharia again. "That doesn't seem like something an apprentice can handle on her own."
"And yet I must," Atharia replied defiantly.
Shadowed figures darted around the balconies and walkways above. They were incredibly outnumbered.
"Foolish girl."
Phelan abandoned the crystals and braced herself for the fight.
"This cause is not worthy of your death. One day you will find a battle worth fighting, a cause worth dying for, but this is not it."
The shadows gave birth to cloaked men and women, wielding staffs and wands. Some even held daggers in their free hand. Atharia reacted with speed akin to an elf, once again impressing Phelan, as she flipped onto a table and dropped into a crouch. Her staff shot out and swept across the air horizontally, expelling a stream of fire that engulfed three of the dark mages. One of the hooded figures was able to raise a shield at the last moment, but the other two dropped to the floor, writhing in burning agony. The apprentice flicked the end of her staff out and caught the surviving mage across the jaw. Phelan was forced to roll out of the way of two fire spells and an explosion of lightning that instead tore a table and chair apart. Amid the shower of splinters and flames, Phelan jumped up and hurled a ball of fire into the nearest dark mage, before launching an armor-piercing icicle at the other. Both mages were dead before they hit the floor. The elf brought her blade up in a flurry of attacks that removed limbs, while she remained ever on the move, evading incoming spells.
A quick glance showed more figures emerging from the rooms on the upper levels.
There's too many!
Phelan shouted over the din. Atharia broke bones with her staff and fired destructive spells in every direction. Books were blown off shelves in shreds of parchment, and others simply caught fire, spreading to other shelves above.
Get the crystals!
The apprentice screamed, whipping her staff into the neck of a charging female mage.
Go!
Phelan was torn, and she hated it. Never would she have considered the life of a human when measured against their mission, or Reyna. Her time with their kind was changing her in ways she wasn't sure she liked. Still, without those crystals, they would be forced to travel a dangerous road and be delayed in reaching nightfall. The elf growled,
"Stay alive!"
She dashed for the door, cutting down four more mages as she did. The last of the hooded figures was used as a battering ram to open the desired door. Following her magical senses, Phelan moved quickly and quietly through the maze of corridors until her skin hummed in the presence of the crystals. Beyond a set of ornate doors, she found her prize, and then some. Dozens of crystals lined the walls of the windowless room, each one shining as if they contained a star. Her gaze was entirely stolen, however, by the larger crystal in the center of the room, fixed atop a small podium. It was just smaller than an average fist, but the power contained within was more telling of its purpose. This was the source of the magic that allowed for the pocketverse to exist. After a few seconds of marveling at the crystal, Phelan had an idea she thought Asher would be proud of. With Atharia's life in the balance, Phelan quickly scooped up a handful of crystals and stored them away on her belt, then moved to place one hand over the larger crystal. The elf drew on her power and unleashed a barrage of lightning upon the gem, focusing on one point. The light contained inside began to flicker as the shell cracked. That was all she needed to destabilize it. A minute later, she was diving back into the library with her scimitar flashing. She loosed a couple of explosive spells to keep the dark mages at bay before landing at Atharia's side, who had collected a multitude of cuts, bruises, and burns.
"We need to leave now!"
They fought in tangent, evading each other's attacks while cutting the horde of mages down.
"The tower is going to collapse on itself!"
Atharia stopped fighting for a fraction and stared at Phelan in disbelief. One look at the elf's expression told the apprentice how serious she was.
"Run!"
Atharia used a spell to turn over a table and fling at the oncoming mages. Both human and elf turned about and sprinted to the door as the tower began to shake. Books from the upper levels fell free of their shelves and rained down with deadly effect. The stone walls cracked, and entire slabs came free, shattering at their feet and expelling plumes of dust into the air.
"Run!"
Phelan shouted over the destruction. She wanted to unleash her speed and run as fast as her elven legs would allow, but she wouldn't leave Atharia behind. By the time they ran into the grounds, the Tower of Gadavance was falling apart. The weather vane plunged into the soft grass where it remained standing, impaled. A great cloud of dust followed them out of the doors, along with the screams of dying mages. The ground beneath their feet cracked and erupted around them while they made for the gate. Atharia pushed her staff out and hit the gate with a concussive blow that forced the doors out wide, bending and snapping their hinges. The two gargoyles came to life and dropped to the floor, but they were too late. Phelan and Atharia dived through the entrance and into the street just as the tower collapsed on itself, bringing the perimeter wall down with it and destroying the gargoyles. The gust of smoke and rubble swept through the streets in every direction. Phelan coughed and stumbled to her feet when strong arms gripped her waist and elbow. Through the haze, she could make out Asher's grisly features as he pulled her to her feet. "Back to the axe," the ranger directed his instruction to Reyna and Nathaniel, who were helping Atharia to her feet. Hadavad stood in the middle of the street, watching the Tower of Gadavance crumble, with a satiated smile pushing his wrinkles together. Malaith's vibrant purple eyes bore into Gideon as he fell backwards beside Gananor. A low rumble echoed inside the dragon's throat, and he slowly moved his wings, shifting his entire body to face them. It was impossible to decipher Malaith's expression, as he always appeared fierce, with his spiraling horns and razor-sharp teeth. Gideon wanted to look around for the other dragons, but didn't dare make any sudden movements. For a moment, he wondered if he should even be looking the dragon in the eyes, aware that there were some creatures who took it as an insult or a challenge. Gananor slowly stood up, before genuflecting with his head bowed in respect. Whether Maliath interpreted it as respect was another matter. Gideon felt the dragon's eyes shift to him, so he copied Gananor's actions and bowed slowly. The Queen of the Elves is being held prisoner in Malaesai, the city where the younglings were being forced to fight. Gananor clearly didn't know where to start, or how much time they would have. If you could fly me out of here, we could go there together and free her as well as destroying... Gananor's next word was lost in Maliath's roar. Both human and elf were instantly covered in hot dragon saliva and driven backwards by the sheer force of his roar. Everything happened in the blink of an eye after that. Gideon felt a strong elven arm push him several feet to his right before Gananor himself dived to the left, over the log. Maliath exhaled a jet of fire that scorched the ground where they had been standing and cut a line through the field. Gideon stood up, only to dive back to the ground again when Maliath's powerful tail whipped over his head. The ground shook and kicked up Gideon's weight in dirt when the spike-covered tail hammered down. At least he got the tail end, he thought. Gananor had the fire-breathing end to deal with. More fire lit up the dark night as Maliath followed Gananor on foot across the clearing. The elf was forced to leap, roll, and dive in every direction to avoid being burned alive. There was no magic or weapon that could get him out of this one. But perhaps Maliath's attention could be split. With his staff in hand, Gideon fired a destructive spell at the ground beside Maliath's head. The explosive force aggravated the dragon and made him turn about in search of the cause. Oh, shit! Maliath's purple eyes flared, narrowing on Gideon. His tail whipped around, and the dragon charged for the mage, who was frozen in place, wondering what shielding spell could stand up to a charging dragon. Run! Gananor shouted from the distance. His cloak was smoking, with small flames licking the bottom of the material. Maliath's mighty feet thundered across the clearing, and Gideon could see the other dragons were too far away to do anything. That was his fault. The mage raised his staff, ready to plant it into the ground and raise a globe of shielding around him, the only option left to him. As Maliath's open maw descended on Gideon, a green blur exploded from the left and intercepted the black dragon. Gideon was forced to jump aside in an attempt to avoid the combined bulk of both dragons, stumbling and rolling across the ground. Their roars filled his ears, though one was definitely quieter than the other. Ilargo! Gideon saw the green dragon snapping at Maliath's neck and clawing desperately at his thick scales. Even though Ilargo was less than half the size of Maliath, his charge had been enough to knock the mighty dragon aside, saving the mage's life. Maliath roared in defiance and smashed his considerable head into Ilargo's, knocking the smaller dragon to the ground. Maliath dipped his head in a flash and bit Ilargo's back leg with enough force to break the scales and draw blood. No! Gideon cried. He could feel the dragon's pain as if it were his own. Even his leg began to hurt, and the mage felt warm blood trickling down to his ankle. Without a sound, Maliath was set upon by three massive dragons. Gideon recognized Emanar the Golden One and Beldroga the Great Hunter, but the largest by far was Vorgraf, the Mountain Child. Vorgraf was the only living offspring of the legendary Garganafan, the old king of the dragons, who gave his life to trap Valinus within the Amber Spell. Vorgraf matched Maliath in size, but there were none who could match the Black Dragon's rage and ferocity. Thankfully, their assault was enough to give Ilargo time to limp away from the brawl. The green dragon came to a stop by Gideon's side, and the mage felt a wave of relief flow out from Ilargo. The dragon was happy that Gideon survived, but his nostrils flared when the fresh blood began to fill the mage's boot. Are you hurt? Gananor appeared on the other side of the dragon, covered in ash and sweat. Any answer from the mage was drowned out by the roars of all four dragons. Vorgraf had gripped Maliath's head between his front claws and moved him about viciously in an attempt to bite his neck. Beldroga the Great Hunter had practically mounted the black dragon to pin his wings in place, while Emanar, the Golden One, wrapped their tails together and pinned them both to the ground. The sound of giant wings battered the air before Galandavax and Raynal dropped out of the sky. Adriel deftly slipped off the side of the ebony dragon and made for Gideon and Gananor. Raynal the Emerald Star strode over to Maliath's struggling mass and simply stared at him. The look was intense, but Gideon could feel a great sense of calm emanating from the Queen of the Dragons. After a few moments of continued struggling, Malaith relented under their combined efforts and dropped to his belly.
Adriel,
Gideon began before the ancient elf held up a hand. I already know what has transpired. Adriel glanced at the massive dragons behind him. You are not to come here again. There was a hint of irritation in the usually calm elf.
Adriel,
Galanor was cut off. Do you understand? Gideon had never seen Adriel wear such a grave expression. Both of them nodded solemnly and turned for the woods, their heads sunk with guilt. Gideon had a last look back at Ilargo and tried to hide his own limp as they left the clearing.
That went well,
Gideon jested, still in shock. Considering. Chapter 15. The Journey to War. Torrin ignored the fresh cuts and bruises that the Arrakesh had left him with, and continued to run under the growing heat of the rising sun. The Son of Nun had already completed one lap of Carath's circumference, as he did every morning, and was halfway around on his second lap. Flashes of a fight with the assassins played over and over in his mind. Torrin had come closer to death that night than any other, at least before Salim found and tutored him. He wanted to push himself. He needed to push himself. With every minute, the heat of the arid lands increased, threatening to dehydrate Torrin before he reached Mother Madakiai's home, his home, and that of 100 others with no parents. With the high wall to his left, Torrin looked out to his right, where Scylla's gate stood, a relic of the old world, a time when the elves walked in Ilion. The massive gates were fixed in the mouth of the valley, barring the path into the Undying Mountains that decorated the south of Ilion. No human had seen the other side of those gates in centuries. Torrin couldn't even remember which emperor had dismissed the last of those who stood guard, no longer required to keep watch over the empty pass. The sound of a dozen running feet and just as many grumbles brought Torrin from his reverie. He was moments from lapping a group of new recruits to the House of Owls. Just as Salim had instructed Torrin to run around Carath every morning, so too did he instruct the Owls. This particular group were relatively new and their stamina was untested. In less than a month, they would each be able to keep up with him, and those who could not would be found a different role within the house.
The last through Mother Madakiai's door has to retrieve a sword from the northern barracks.
Torrin smiled when their sighs quickly changed to expressions of determination. The only thing they would want to do is eat when they finished, not go sneaking around the soldiers' barracks. With a last glance at Scylla's gate, Torrin ran on until he passed through the main gates in the north of Carath. Weaving through the streets and the vendors setting up for market, the White Owl quickly found his way back to Mother Madakiai's orphanage. The building was humble in appearance and in need of much repair, but Torrin liked it that way. No one looked twice at the decrepit place, let alone suspected of being the headquarters to the House of Owls. As always, Torrin found Mother Madakiai, a woman of great age, teaching a group of children, as well as being assisted by the older ones to hand out bowls of food. Some things would never change, he thought. He stopped for just a moment to look upon the children and remember why he put on that mask every night. If granting them their freedom required his death, he would gladly give it. Once inside his own room, Torrin removed his shirt with great difficulty. His torso was glistening with sweat and running over his fresh wounds. He didn't like the others to see him in pain, or the toll his life had taken on his body. Every muscle heaved with his labored breaths, revealing a patchwork of old scars and new, too many for one of his young age. Acquiring the skills necessary to defeat an Arrakesh, however, had required a lifetime of beatings. A familiar knock on the door brought a smile to his face.
"Come in, Brago."
His oldest friend walked in without his usual smile.
"He's here."
Torrin's own smile faded.
"Where is he?"
"On the roof. He arrived not long before you." Torrin looked up to the ceiling as if he could see his brother, Halion Al-Anon, standing there.
"Make sure the last retrieves the sword from the barracks," Brago finished for him.
"I know."
The roof of the orphanage was flat for the exception of a large dome that occupied the center. The sun continued to rise, casting long shadows over the tops of Carath's rooftops. Torrin marched over to the corner where Halion stood, wrapped in a long cloak and shroud to conceal his head.
The White Owl ignored his brother's attempts to embrace, and instead threw the hawk-like helmet at the commander's feet.
"What is this?" Halion asked as he bent to pick it up.
"Where have you been?" Torrin demanded, his usual anger rising to the surface. "I've been trying to reach you for 2 days."
Halion held up a calming hand.
"There have been developments."
"You mean like the Arrakesh?"
Torrin could see the surprise on Halion's face, but not for the right reason.
"They have attacked you?"
Halion scanned Torrin's body with a critical eye.
"They stalk my owls from the shadows, myself included. Though I see their presence doesn't surprise you," Torrin added the latter with accusatory venom.
"I've had to pull back half of our nightly patrols."
Halion sighed.
"They've been instructed to patrol the city in secret. Their orders are simple. Find owls and kill them." The commander was about to turn away before adding,
"And don't think they only hunt at night, Torrin. The Arrakesh have been trained to blend into all cultures, day or night."
"How can you know these things?" Torrin asked.
"I did it, brother."
Halion pulled one of his gloves off and held up his hand, where a familiar silver ring sat on his middle finger.
"I have been brought into the inner circle of the New Dawn."
Torrin quickly reached out and held Halion's finger in place so that he might better inspect the ring.
"Tell me everything."
The sun had risen a hand's length in the sky before Halion was finished telling his tale. Torrin sat on the edge of the dome, his expression frozen in disbelief.
"Elves? Darkakin?" the White Owl echoed, as if saying it out loud would make it more believable.
"They call him Nakir," Halion explained, though I got the distinct impression that the other one was in charge.
Aladir Yalathanil. He was the one who brought the Arrakesh.
Halion sat opposite his brother on the edge of the rooftop.
"Elves have been controlling the New Dawn?"
Torrin was still struggling with the idea of elves even being in Ilion, let alone the thought of them being so wicked.
"They serve Varanus," Halion continued.
"That is who the New Dawn has been working for all these years."
"I have heard that name before."
Torrin stood up and began pacing while he told Halion of Orphad's last words.
"Since being brought into the inner circle, Rorsarsh has had me followed, but I managed to get some time in the palace library. I have been looking through the old tomes for any information. I thought it was some kind of elven god. But then I found this."
Halion removed a scroll from within his robes and laid it out for Torrin to see.
"He wasn't a god. He was some mad elf that started a civil war 1,000 years ago.
The scroll was old, but it clearly showed the account of something called the Dark War, though the scroll had been scribed by a human and not an elf, so it was most likely inaccurate, as so many legends were after passing through the generations."
Torrin took it from Halion's hands and inspected every inch of the parchment, paying close attention to the names throughout the text.
Aladir and Nakir were mentioned at least twice as being generals during the war.
"I don't understand any of this."
Torrin handed the scroll back to Halion, deflated. Not only were they fighting against the Empire and the slavers, but now they were pitted against ancient elves, deadly assassins and an army of Darkakin. Another legend come to life, all of which appeared to be involved in some conspiracy to invade Ilion. This was much larger than just the arid lands and the freeing of slaves. If the New Dawn succeeded in opening Scylla's gate, the Darkakin would make slaves of all of Ilion. A fate worse than death, if the old stories of their kind were true.
"The arrival of the Arrakesh is proof that we have become more than a thorn in their side," Halion offered.
"But more than that, it is rallying more of the men to our way of thinking. Every day, more of the soldiers complain of the assassins' overbearing presence, not to mention a few casualties. Rorsarsh is losing his grip on the army, and when they see that he is working to open our city to the Darkakin,
it will be too late by then."
Torrin paced over the rooftop. "If the Darkakin breach those gates, it will all be over. If the amount of armor being made is any indication, we're outnumbered."
Halion said nothing for a moment, his dark eyes glazed over in contemplation.
"Then we act now." Torrin looked up at his brother's face and saw the hard resolve that he wore like armor.
"It's too soon to act, Halion. We planned on having more years before taking—"
"You said it yourself. It will be too late by then. The Darkakin are marching towards our home this very moment. Do you have owls in the other cities?"
Halion appeared desperate for the answer.
"Of course, but—"
"Send word, Torrin. Bring them all back to Carath, every owl you have.
We cannot abandon those cities, brother. Every day they work to free new slaves.
Torrin was glad to see Halion finally thinking on an attacking foot, but this time frame was not as they had always planned.
If we control the head, Halion swept his arm across Carath's vista, we control the body. One sweeping attack to take the palace. Only then will the army listen to me.
Once Rorschach is dead and the boy emperor dethroned,
the soldiers will fight for us, I know it. They had wives, children, and parents in this city. They don't want the Darkakin anywhere near their families.
Torrin looked away, out over the city he thought of as home, and a prison, all in one. Making a move against the palace now was risky with their numbers, but the added trouble of potentially fighting the Arrakesh made the decision all the harder. He didn't even want to think about fighting the elves. If it went wrong, the House of Owls would be crippled in a single night, Halion would be executed, and everything they had worked towards for so many years would be for nothing. The alternative was far worse when Torrin considered it. To do nothing now would spell not only Carath's doom, but all the free people of Ilion.
"Gather those in your ranks who are most faithful to our cause," Torrin instructed Halion, with the same expression of determination. "I will see to the owls."
Halion smiled.
"So, we're really doing it then. We're going to war."
Torrin couldn't find his own smile.
"I fear war is coming to us, brother."
The White Owl looked to the south, where Scylla's Gate stood foreboding in the middle of the Undying Mountains.
Chapter 16. Saying Farewell.
Nathaniel ascended the stairwell and entered the hubbub of the Pickaxe, leaving Rayna and Phelan to meditate in peace. The elves required more time for their magic to coalesce and store inside the crystals, stolen from the Tower of Gadavance. The entire heist had become far more dramatic than originally planned, with the whole tower crumbling into the streets. Thankfully, they had fled the area before the city watch arrived. The knight had heard of the magical cult known as the Black Hand, but he had never come across them on his patrols, a fact that he was thankful for, having heard Phelan's tale. The early afternoon saw the tavern filled with patrons and visitors from other lands. Doran and Glade were sat on the far side, surrounded by a gathering of wide-eyed drinkers, listening to tales of their joint adventures. Nathaniel looked around for familiar faces, and wondered where Hadavat and Atharia had disappeared off to. After stealing the crystals, the mages had mysteriously vanished, no doubt discussing the Black Hand. Asher had told of their offer to assist them in retrieving Paldora's gem and defeating Balinus. It was a bold offer, but Nathaniel was more than happy to have some more magic users on their side, providing they returned from wherever they were.
"Mr. Galfrey!" Russell Mabry's yellow eyes flashed from behind the bar as he placed a tankard of ale down for the night.
Nathaniel gladly took the stool beside Asher and tentatively held the frothing ale.
"It's a little early for me."
Russell stared blankly at the knight before walking further down the bar to serve another customer. Nathaniel had faced many monsters in his time on the road, but Russell's unnatural yellow eyes still managed to make the hairs on his neck freeze.
"Don't worry," Asher said with a coy smile. "He has that effect on everyone."
"What is he?" Nathaniel asked quietly. He wasn't novice enough to miss the supernatural aura that Russell gave off.
"You can't tell,"
Asher replied through a stifled laugh.
"What were they teaching you at Westphalian?"
Nathaniel refused to rise to the jest.
"I have my suspicions."
Asher finished the last of his ale and dragged Nathaniel's tankard over.
"What are you, Russell?"
the ranger asked in hushed tones. Before Nathaniel could ask why the ranger had whispered the question into his drink, Russell Mabry walked back up the bar to stand before them, his yellow eyes boring into Nathaniel.
"I'm a wolf."
The barkeeper took Asher's empty tankard and wandered off. Nathaniel tried to keep his expression neutral, but he could feel himself going red. He had never met a werewolf he hadn't been forced to kill. 3 nights of the month, they were among the deadliest of creatures to stalk the night. But even in their human form, people afflicted with lycanthropy were violent and prone to episodes of wild aggression.
"He has a good ear," the knight commented, unable to think of anything else to say.
"How is he so
human?"
Asher offered. "I took a job in Kelptown years ago. A werewolf had been seen dragging the local butcher into the woods. Typical job. By the time I tracked the beastie down, the full moon had passed, leaving Russell behind. Found him covered in blood, trying to hang himself. I thought, great, I'll still get paid either way. But I wasn't the only one to track him down. Asher looked down the bar to Russell. A small mob came across him in the woods and decided a hanging was too easy. Ross pleaded with them to leave him alone, but when they attacked, instincts kicked in. With his bare hands he beat them back until it was just the two of us.
You didn't kill him, Nathaniel stated. I thought his strength could be put to better use.
Asher nodded with his chin to the notched pickaxe mounted on the wall. It took a while, but we managed to find a few techniques that helped to keep his aggression in check.
What about during a full moon?
Asher licked the froth from his top lip. There's nothing to keep that in check.
You travel together? Nathaniel asked, surprised.
For a while. I travel with most of them for some time or another.
Asher turned around to look at Glade and Doran.
I bet there are a few stories there, Nathaniel replied, eager to hear any of them.
Yeah.
Asher stood up from his stool, distracted. Nathaniel followed his gaze to the corner of the tavern, where the southerner, Salim al-Anan, was sitting sipping hot tea.
What is it? The knight asked, before the ranger could walk away.
Where we're going, it wouldn't be such a bad thing to have a native on our side, especially one who knows his way around a sword.
You mean to have him join us as well?
Nathaniel eyed the mysterious black-clad warrior with new interest.
I'm going to try.
Asher didn't look very hopeful as he walked away. Nathaniel remained at the bar, tugging at his cloak to get comfortable. He reminded himself to get rid of the ridiculous cape as soon as he could. The knight didn't understand how Asher could live with one on his back, let alone fight in it. After convincing Russell to serve him some water, Nathaniel began his search anew. There had been one particular ranger that he wanted to talk to.
"Russell," he called, "where is Caleb Jourdain?"
By this hour, Russell surveyed the tavern. If he's not passed out in a ditch, he'll be in the locker.
Locker?
Downstairs, beyond all the rooms. Russell's thick arms pumped as he drank tankard after tankard.
I still don't follow, Nathaniel said.
Russell's laugh was closer to a snort, though it quickly turned to anger when the high-pitched squeal of a notorious warthog burst into the tavern. The pig knocked one of the patrons over and immediately went for his tankard of ale.
Doran!
Russell yelled at the dwarf. Nathaniel slipped away amid the chaos and descended back into the secret chambers beneath the pickaxe. As directed, the knight continued past the doors of the sleeping chambers and through the door at the end of the stone corridor. With no windows, everywhere under the tavern was illuminated by mounted torches and small hearths. A partially open door, leading to a room that he had never seen before, caught Nathaniel's attention. He hesitated but found his curiosity overwhelming as he opened the door and peered inside. The chamber was bare with a single cage situated in the center. The bars of the cage were thick and covered in scratches, along with the stone floor inside. Here and there, some of the bars were bent, as if something had tried to push between them. It didn't take long for Nathaniel to realize what the room had been designed for. Russell Mabry spent 3 nights of every month inside that cage. The knight closed the door behind him and tried not to think about the werewolf and his subconscious desire to slay the monster. As Nathaniel approached the so-called locker, he could hear the clean swipes of a sword cutting rhythmically through the air. As quietly as he could, Nathaniel opened the door and crept into the new room. It only took a cursory glance around the chamber to realize what it really was, and it was certainly one of the better armories he had seen, and he had grown up in Westphalian. All 4 walls of the rectangular room were lined with swords of all sizes, axes both single and double-bladed, clubs, spears, daggers, staffs and shields. Some appeared to be antiques, while others looked newly forged and polished. Padded mats filled the majority of the floor, with thick wooden mannequins situated in the corners, all lined with scars. Caleb Jourdain was adorned in his usual tattered long coat and mismatched armor, and his bristly cheeks were in danger of catching up with his bushy white moustache. Nathaniel could smell the alcohol mixing in the air with his sweat as he hefted his sword through familiar techniques. The knight recognized most of the movements, though it appeared Caleb had adjusted a few swings as he got older.
"Come to see your future, have you, boy?"
Caleb didn't stop his routine to talk.
"Not quite."
Nathaniel walked further into the armory to see a small annex built into the wall. The alcove was home to a variety of armor and clothes. The knight resisted the urge to look through it all, and focused on the old greycoat. Caleb ended his routine with a strong swipe that left his sword buried in the side of a mannequin. He finished with a few sips from a small flask on his belt.
"You think that old age is just something that happens in our line of work?"
Caleb held his arms out.
"If you haven't got my skill, boy, you're going to need a whole bucket of luck."
"You have good form."
Nathaniel nodded along, agreeing with the grumpy ranger rather than starting an argument.
"And your swing is strong, too."
Caleb's sword wobbled in the wooden mannequin.
"Don't butter my ass, knight."
Caleb shook the flask in his hand.
"I might have a little in me, but I can still see that arrogant face of yours. You think you can best me?"
The ranger held his arms out, inviting Nathaniel to take a shot.
"I didn't come down here to start a fight."
Nathaniel held up his hands.
"I don't doubt your skill. I know too well where you were trained."
"You mean you know who I trained alongside?"
Caleb replied knowingly. Nathaniel had assumed that was how Caleb knew his father. They would have been roughly the same age had he still been alive. In a way, he envied people like Caleb for having clearer memories of the man. With every year, his childhood memories faded.
"So what did you come down here for?"
Caleb retrieved his sword and took a seat on one of the low benches, where he proceeded to clean the blade.
"I'm not even sure I know where here is. I thought I was in a tavern. Then I found out there was a tavern within the tavern, and now there's an armory to boot. They call it the Locker, the other rangers. I wasn't acquainted with the establishment back then, but I hear this was his locker. Ashes, that is. Russell allowed him to keep weapons and supplies here. But as you can see, the other rangers had ideas of their own."
Nathaniel nodded along and glanced back at the alcove, realizing that the line of swords in the corner were all double-handed and adorned with a spiked pommel, each identical to the one Asher had lost in the Battle of Westphalian. Beside them was a rack lined with dark green cloaks. It appeared Asher was a creature of habit.
"So," Caleb continued to clean his sword, "what do you want, boy?"
Nathaniel threw a small bag of coins taken from the stowhold pouch. Caleb stopped cleaning and surprisingly caught the bag mid-air. "To remind you of the old oaths you once took, and to offer you a job." As the warthog dashed by with a triumphant squeal and an empty tankard hanging off one of its tusks, Asher ignored Russell's complaints and sat back in his chair, having laid it all out for Salim, and observed the concern spread across the southerner's face.
"You helped me when I needed it most, Asher, and you gave me purpose when I could see only despair. For that you will always have my sword. But you know I cannot enter the arid lands. I am exiled. I'm not asking you to settle down and find a job in Amaraska. But when we get to Karath, we're going to need a guide who knows how to get us in and out, with fresh supplies and no noise." Asher didn't like asking for help, and found the whole experience to be very foreign to him. But he continued to think of the dangers that lay ahead of them, and he knew better than most that they would need numbers if they were to survive. Selim didn't look convinced.
"You can speak every language in the south, and you are far more accustomed to such..." The foreign ranger struggled to find the correct word. "Sneakiness." Asher looked around before leaning closer to Salim.
"There have been rumors coming out of the south for years, but over the last few months, those rumors have quickly become fact. What started as a rebellion has grown into a not-so-secret civil war over slavery."
"What is your point, Asher?"
"War doesn't make a country easier to sneak in and out of. There will be checkpoints at every entrance to Karath. Everyone's looking for a fight, and foreigners are considered a complication. A former member of the Emperor's Honor Guard could help with that."
Salim looked away upon hearing his former title.
"I am exiled for a reason, Asher. The Emperor and his wife were killed on my watch. Not only was I banished for my failure, but the people of Karath consider me a disgrace. There are no, how do you say, palms I can grease to get us in and out of the city, let alone grant you safe passage inside the city walls."
"Then perhaps the son of a former honor guard can help, one who's now the second in command of Karath's forces."
Asher watched the surprise consume Salim's expression.
"Don't pretend like you don't know. You might be exiled, but you're sure as hell still keeping an eye out for your boy. How is Halion?"
Salim's look of surprise slid from his face.
"It seems your ear is never far from the ground, old friend."
The southerner's tone turned grave.
Halion fights with his heart amid a nest of vipers. Like me, he has always disagreed with the idea of slavery, but he felt called to serve his emperor and people. In truth, I do not know how he fares in the current state. I cannot imagine him fighting to keep slaves, but I cannot imagine him standing against his superiors. Alas, it has been a long time since I've embraced him. He could be a very different man by now.
Salim's somber gaze found Asher.
I am sorry, old friend. I dream of walking in my land again and conversing in my native tongue with my son. But I am exiled. Asher wanted to protest and continue to pressure Salim into joining them, but he could see that it was futile. The old honor guard had made up his mind, and there was nothing the ranger could say to change it.
If I see Halion, I will tell him his father as well, and perhaps share one or two of your tales.
With a strong pat on Salim's shoulder, Asher stood up and left. Caleb Jordan rocked back on his heels with laughter until it turned into a coughing fit.
Now why would I want to go and do a thing like that?
The ranger finally managed after hearing Nathaniel's proposition.
You made an oath.
The Greycoats branded me an oath breaker when they banished me from the order. Caleb waved away Nathaniel's attempts to inspire honor.
That's why I brought the coin.
Nathaniel nodded at the bag of coins in Caleb's hand.
Hmm. It is a nice bag of coins,
the old Greycoat mused.
But it's not a great bag of coins.
Nathaniel blinked slowly, starting to wonder if he'd made a mistake.
I will give you more upon completion of the task.
Caleb laughed again.
I might have been drunk, but I still heard your master plan. There's no way any of you are returning from that. This here bag of coins is all I'll ever see from you, unless I go looking for your corpse.
Nathaniel sighed at his error in judgment and made for the door.
Wait, Caleb called out. You know why I'm not interested? But why do you care?
Nathaniel considered his answer.
For peace of mind.
Caleb laughed again.
Peace of mind? What could you possibly worry about? Westphalian got hit pretty hard, but hundreds of Greycoats are gathering in Darkwell. You think the Arrakesh will attack them again?
I want you to go and keep an eye on them, that's all. I have an uneasy feeling about King Tyon's invitation. The men who attacked us in Velia had been seen in his escort out of Nandor. I am paying you to go to Darkwell and ensure that nothing is going on behind the scenes. The Greycoats won't be looking for trouble. You will. If you discover anything, report it.
But why? Caleb asked again.
Nathaniel looked at the sword on Caleb's hip and knew there was a part of the ranger that clung to the order. You and I might not be Greycoats anymore, but those are still good men and women who stand up for the realm, not the kingdoms. I don't want to see Ilion without them. Nathaniel could see the old ranger's expression softening as he took in his words.
It'll be the easiest coin you ever make.
Do you know how many times I've heard that? Caleb stood up, fingering the individual coins in the bag as he considered the job.
Fine. Consider the job accepted, though I expect another bag of coins when we next meet.
Nathaniel had no choice but to accept the terms and worry about the second payment later, should he live long enough to give it thought. They clasped forearms, marking the job as accepted.
I will leave at once.
Caleb made for the door, only stopping to help himself to a new curved dagger off the wall.
That'll do, the ranger said, inspecting the edge of the blade.
Nathaniel was left wondering what the arrangement was regarding the weapons and armor. With a last look at the alcove, the knight returned to the tavern above. The rest of the day slowly drifted by, and Nathaniel found himself becoming restless. He wanted to check on Rayna and Phelan, but didn't want to disturb them. Phelan had stressed how much energy would be required to transport them all through one portal and over such a distance. It was easy to forget how old the young-looking elf was, and the wisdom that accompanied such age. Nathaniel trusted her judgment and left the elves to their meditation. Asher had sat with Glade for most of the afternoon, talking about old times on the road together. Nathaniel was content to sit and eat and drink, as Doran and Salim took turns telling of their adventures and hunts. Most of Doran's brought Nathaniel to tears with laughter, while Salim's accent made for intriguing storytelling of the kind he could sit and listen to all day. When the big man Bale stood up to regale his time on the road, Nathaniel often found himself put off his food by the gruesome details. When the dust set over Lirion and the tops of the Evermore took on an orange hue, Hadavad and Atharia returned to the axe. Nathaniel picked up his drink and joined them at their table.
"Well met," the knight greeted them.
"Mr. Galfrey." Hadavad nodded with a warm smile. Atharia remained as passive as ever.
"We missed you today," Nathaniel commented.
"Forgive our absence," Hadavad replied, placing his staff against the wall.
"We've been in council with Queen Isabella. I felt it prudent to inform her of the Black Hand's presence, as well as apologize for the tower's untimely destruction."
"You have counseled the Queen?" Nathaniel echoed with concern. "The Evermore has always felt like home to me, and so for 500 years I have counseled all the kings and queens who have ruled over the region of Felgarn. But fear not, Mr. Galfrey, I made no mention of you or your companions." Asher had told Nathaniel of the Major's mysterious age, though neither knew the truth of the matter. The knight was just relieved to hear that their presence remained a secret, for now.
"Rayna and Phelan have been storing magic in the crystals all day," Nathaniel explained. "They should be ready soon."
"We're ready to travel," Hadavad glanced at Atharia, who nodded her agreement.
"We're grateful for your company. I think a great deal of magic will be required if we're to survive the arid lands, never mind getting in and out of nightfall."
Nathaniel didn't want to think about that last part.
"The order will be ours to assist in such a quest."
Hadavad called over one of the waitresses to order food.
"I will leave you to eat in peace."
"Please, stay," Hadavad pleaded. "It would be nice to hear a tale or two of the Greycoats. Caleb Jourdain has a way of forgetting the details."
Nathaniel just hoped the old Greycoat could stay sober long enough to reach Darkwell.
When the sky was filled with stars, Rayna and Phelan emerged from their room, exhausted. They told of their need to rest, and the companions prepared to leave at dawn. In truth, Nathaniel was glad of the extra night of comfort, surrounded by new friends. For just a moment, he glimpsed a life where he didn't patrol the land months on end, searching for monsters and bandits. Instead, he imagined a life with a house he could call his own, and a wife and children to dote on. A life where he didn't have to think about where the next fight was coming from. When the dawn greeted the land, Nathaniel awoke in the ranger's tavern beneath the axe. His cloak had been removed and placed over the top of him as he slept in the worn armchair. The knight looked around to see Asher, Glade, and Doran in similar positions, all sat around the fire with empty tankards at their feet. Bale lay sprawled across the table, with his large legs and heavy head hanging over the edges.
"Good morning."
Selim al-Anan was sitting at the long table, sipping a steaming cup of tea. His greeting could only just be heard over Doran snoring. Nathaniel sat up and rubbed his eyes, regretting the amount of ale the dwarf had convinced him to drink. They had drunk long into the night, with little thought of the journey ahead of them. At least the rangers could sleep it off, the knight thought. Asher and he would have the arid lands to contend with if the portal worked.
"Perhaps we should have stopped a little earlier," Nathaniel commented.
"Wait for it."
Selim wore an amused smile. Before Nathaniel could ask what he was talking about, the door burst open with a crack that threatened to open his skull. Asher and Glade jumped in their chairs, while Bale fell off the table with an almighty thump. Doran continued to snore.
"Wakey, wakey!"
Russell Mabry strode into the room with a tray of shot glasses filled with yellow liquid. Glade shoved a heavy elbow into the dwarf's shoulder.
"Doran!"
The dwarf awoke with a start, yelling curses.
"What are you about?" "Wake up, heavy belly."
Russell placed the tray down on a small table between them all.
"Take your medicine."
Nathaniel picked up the shot glass and inspected the luminous liquid.
"What is it?"
he asked, with a groggy voice.
"Better not ask."
Asher downed his shot and winced as he swallowed. The others all followed suit and made the same face. Even the mighty Bale looked pained by the taste.
"Bah!" Doran spat. "Always tastes like hog's piss." "Unless you want that headache to last all day."
Asher bade Nathaniel to drink the shot. Nathaniel downed the shot in one, and for just a moment, the taste almost sent his nausea over the edge, until it suddenly subsided, taking his headache with it.
"That was disgusting."
Nathaniel wiped his mouth and returned the shot glass.
"Humans."
Phelan was standing behind Russell with a judging look. Rayna met Nathaniel's eyes and smiled, amused with his previous disposition. Both elves appeared to have recovered from a whole day of collecting and storing magical energy, however.
"We should be leaving,"
Phelan observed, tactful as ever. Russell held out his hand.
I couldn't have you leave in such a way, and especially with a task such as yours. You have coin for supplies, but I offer you supplies you won't readily find in a market. The group followed Russell down the underground corridors until they found the armory Nathaniel had visited the previous day.